Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. This is Adam Barrett.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. Hey, Adam, I got a question came in yesterday. You know all those prompts we've been doing for years now, it seems like?
Yes.
People actually use it. I love it. So now they sent it to me via email. So I didn't get permission to use their name or details of their situation, but it was a very short email. And it sounded like, and I'm making some conjectures here, it sounds like somebody that's relatively new to reliability, and their boss told them, hey, we've got three subsystems on our product we're making that are from three different vendors, and your assignment is to do a RAM analysis. And I think what he means by RAM is reliability, availability, or reliability, maintainability, and availability study or analysis. And so his question was, is there a formula to do this?
Right.
And I'm, yeah, A plus B plus C, you know,
right,
squared, right. You know, square root of something. I don't know.
Well, I guess, you know, right. I mean, so there's a whole engineering discipline that does that. And there's, you know, that's a very broad question. There's obviously a lot of very specific analyses that are involved in doing that correctly.
But it could be very, very simple, right? Or it could be very, very complex, depending on the product itself and what kind of
promises. Well, the key word there is or. The key word is or. Or it could be this, or it could be that, or it could be this, or it could be that. Like, it's not a specific question. It's, you know, it's something, you know, so for instance, you know, reliability and, you know, availability, maintainability analysis. I mean, that is the whole engineering discipline that we've dedicated our careers to, and bookshelves and bookshelves of books that cover all the different subsets of that question. And I mean, it's, so, you know, I mean, the reliability, I mean, you'd have to, the question needs to be more specific. What is the reliability analysis you're looking for? Are you looking to understand, you know, what the distribution is of failures during use life? Are you looking to understand the wear out behavior failure modes? Are you looking to see if where preventive maintenance can be used to extend the over, you know, or meet the overall life goal of the product? Mm-hmm. You know, is availability, what's the mean time to repair? Who's really the customer, the person who purchased it? Is it capital equipment? Is it a consumable? Is it a, you know, so those questions are dangerous. And those are all the questions that he should be asking his boss, so his boss can understand that it's not, you know, what is it they really need? I mean, my question in return would be, let's not start with a specific request to complete something. Let's start with, what is it you're trying to get to, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
first,
exactly.
Find out what is it you're trying to do.
Yeah. And yeah, it's, I mean, if the request is, you know, do this analysis, well, to what point, you know, which is a great question to ask, because you need to actually accomplish a task so that it's useful and meaningful. If you go away for 2 months and do what you think is a RAM analysis and you come back and go, no, we didn't need that, we need this, well, then you wasted 2 months. So it's prudent to ask right away, right? Even if it seems a bit, I don't know, out of place, to say, well, why do you need this? What's it going to be used for? What's the point of this? What's the purpose? How much investment can we put into it? You know, to what detail do you need to know these answers? How's it going to be used in other places? Things like that. Yet I remember as a young engineer, somebody had asked me to go do something, and I'd go learn how to do it and go do it. And I wasn't until later I started to learn that, well, you're much more successful if you understand what it's going to be used for. That's a bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense to go to the expert and tell them what to do. You should bring to them the problem, right? I don't go to my dentist and say, I need a root canal. He's going to say, well, let's see, you know, and then mm-hmm. he's going to examine my teeth and then have a prognosis, and then he's going to prescribe certain actions, right? It's I'm not the expert. I shouldn't be coming in with a suggestion on what to do. So exactly. So the more whoever asked him that question should have said, hey, we're trying to figure out what the budget for a warranty cost after this new product release. Okay, there you go. That's a specific question. And then you can come up with a strategy based on what resources are available, what information is available, what the timeline is. And you would then, you know, do the best you can to answer that question with those inputs.
But it's one of those things where you take, oh, we want to estimate warranty. And a similar question would be for a repairable system. Well, how many spares do we need to have? Well, then you're gonna need to know some of the basics of, well, what's likely to fail? What's the use conditions? How do those things vary? And then you can run some simple calculations to and make some estimates on it. But if you have a highly redundant, very complex product, then you got to use better tools than a simple distribution and some back of the envelope calculations. So it's, I think early on, as you mentioned, it's or. It's, well, yeah, you got to frame this problem a little bit better. So what would be, I mean, the first question you asked was, what are you going to use this for? What are you trying to achieve, I think is the way you phrased it.
Well, I think the person who, well, let's just call him Bob, so we'll stop saying the person. So Bob's question to you, you know, Bob, I'm already speculating Bob's in a bad situation because for his boss to ask that question, that means that there's no current reliability work being done in that company. And they also have no idea what is involved with getting reliability deliverables. So,
yeah, I mean, no, I'm laughing because I ran into somebody at a conference and they said, I got a story to tell you. And he said, my boss came in and said that he wanted me to do this FMEA thing because he heard it was a good thing to do for their product. And so she organized a meeting with six of the leading engineers for the team. And before the meeting started, her boss came back to her and said, whoa, wait a minute. What are you doing with all these people? I asked you to do the FMEA. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. You're just not understanding what you're asking here.
Exactly. Actually, it's funny when you're saying this, I'm picturing what turned out to be a reasonable version of this is, you know, people, it's always an interesting story how people get into reliability because it's not something you generally select as a discipline, you know, as an undergrad in engineering or even as in your master's. It's something that you have a base discipline in some other type of engineering like mechanical, electrical, software. And then you kind of, what my mentor used to call, you get bitten by the reliability bug and you find out that you really love this thing and you pursue it. Mm-hmm. So because of that, everybody kind of has an interesting story of when they got bit by the bug. And so for me, it was almost a question to some degree that this person Bob got, but it was asked by people who also knew they didn't know what they were asking. So I was lucky. It's when I was running the finite element analysis group in the R&D department for physics and engineering. And I always say I was walking, and this is really what happened. I was walking to the bathroom one day. I was going down the hall. I walked past an open doorway, and the director and VP were in there. And they said, hey, Adam. And I was like, what? And they said, can you do some research on reliability and kind of write a paper for us, help us understand? We kind of think we need to be more formal about it. And I was like, all right, but I'm going to the bathroom first, and then I'll take a look at it, you know. So I did, wrote them a paper on it, and I didn't know how urgent it was, but I knew I had an urgent agenda. So I wrote them a paper on it, and they were like, oh, all right, this is kind of cool. Can you do some more research, another one? And, you know, I did, and, you know, eventually got to the point they said, look, we think this is really important and we should pursue it. We'd like to actually create a department. Would you like to help start that? And they grabbed a mentor for me that they brought in. He had over 30 years experience at, you know, IBM and some military stuff. And we brought him up here from Texas to Massachusetts. And he and I together, you know, built a department that by the end of it was two big labs and was a part of every product development thing. You know, the budget's millions of dollars a year. So the real answer to that question is, can we do reliability, you know, and maintainability? Is yes, if you're willing to invest millions of dollars over multiple years and, you know, and ramp it up. And so to some degree, it was the same question, but they also were aware that they didn't know what they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so that's the real answer. And I always see that on smaller increments as well. I have customers, you know, I deal with all kinds of different customers, small companies, big companies, different industries. And sometimes how people approach me, you know, sometimes they're smaller companies like startups, and they'll be like, okay, we designed this. Can you help us make it reliable before we release it? And, you know, of course, red flags go off for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just even describing to them some of the most basic things, what has to be done, you know, they realize like, whoops, uh-oh. You know, even just what you need to do for good data collection to even figure out what you're going to do with it. And they realize how cumbersome and time consuming it is to even just get the right data. And so, yeah, there's definitely a process of understanding what it takes to make something more reliable. It's a significant investment. It's, yeah.
You know, I'm wondering if those two people that called you into the office to, you know, ask you to get more info on something, you know, that might have been deliberate to you becoming the expert. You know, all you needed to be is a little bit ahead of everybody else in the building, or, you know, those two guys and or two folks in particular, and then you would be recognized as the reliability expert. And I wonder if they deliberately asked you to go do that to see if, you know, if you, one, did it, that would be a starter to see if you wanted to run the program and had a grasp of it, but they gave you permission to go study it, right?
Hmm. Oh, no, I mean, I joke that I happened to be going to the bathroom. I'm quite sure. I mean, I'm quite sure that they had selected me and just were, you know, waiting to talk with me and just saw me happen to go by.
But that's different than saying, hey, go create a reliability group when you had no idea what that was, right? They said, hey, go do some research. You know, yeah, go do exactly. Some more research. So they were basically saying, go learn yourself up on this, and then we'll go from there.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No. The basic idea of, you know, go do an analysis is, I think we're agreeing that that's the wrong question to ask somebody, and it needs a comeback of, well, where is this going to be used? What decision is going to be made with it? How is it going to be? To what degree does it need to be? All the criteria. And I've often used a concept called a complete request. And I think if I remember right, there's five elements. So I request of you, Adam, to do X to this criteria, these are the standards of when we know it's good or done by a certain date. Yeah, I think that's five things. You know, so me, you, the task, the criteria, and a date. And if any of those five are missing, it's usually not a good request, and it requires a comeback saying, well, when do you need it? So like your story, Adam, when I got into reliability, my boss asked me to do an accelerated life test for a product that we're under development. And the intent was to show whether or not the product would last for 20 years. And I asked, well, where's this going to be used? And trying to get some of the, you know, criteria around how am I going to go about testing this thing? And it was in Northern Italy. So immediately in my mind, does this mean I get to go to Northern Italy for 20 years to see how many last? And he goes, no, we need the answer in 6 months. So I was immediately dashed. I hated reliability. I didn't ever want to see it again. but then he explained why he needed to have the answer. There was a major customer, and they needed some evidence to show whether or not it was a risk worth taking to build this product into their systems that were expected to last for 20 years. And okay, that makes sense. Let me go sort this out. And then this director of engineering also really understood the failure mechanisms of the product and was able to help me design a task that really took advantage of that knowledge. So that was the fun part. I did the legwork and the statistics. He brought the chemistry and the engineering, and that was fun. But when you go to look for, I was going to say, one of my other bosses over the years, I brought him an answer to an analysis he asked me to do, right? And he goes, well, that's not the right answer. I went, what? He goes, well, that's not the answer I thought it was. Well, then why did you have me go do it? He goes, go change your work and go keep testing until you get my answer.
Right.
Like, no.
Lots of tests that are done for that reason, right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's sometimes you get answers that are just unethical. You know, if you ask, what do you need this for? Well, I need to prove that it works. Well, what if it doesn't work? Well, no, then you can't do that study. You have to study it only if it works.
Right.
Well, then what do you need to do the study for? If you're going to have an answer already in place. But I think back to our Bob, our question here is that there isn't a formula. There's an approach. It is, you have to understand the question and what it's going to be used for and to what degree it needs to be done. What's the criteria that qualifies it as being complete? And when? I mean, there's a handful of those elements that we're just missing. But it's in RAM analysis, like you said, Adam, is that there's a lot in that. It could be, if it's availability, well, you're going to need to know the reliability and maintainability aspects of it. And sounded like that was this kind of a system, a big repairable system. But is the focus on repairs or on their advertising? What can they guarantee? Or on their leasing conditions? Or is it pursuing a new market? Is it pursuing a different part of the world and different use conditions? What's the ramification? You know, yeah, you could spend years and years and years doing an analysis and then go, oh, wait a second, we only wanted this piece of it for this part over here and completely missed the boat. So, yeah, I think we're pretty unified in that. No, you got to understand the request and make sure that the person asking you understands what they're asking you to do and negotiate that or come to an agreement on it, make sure it's clear.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely don't want to shut them down. I mean, it's always great to hear people interested in the topic, but there can be a calibration.
Yeah. 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 I think one of my favorite stories is I was sitting in an engineer's office for one of the HP divisions, and he was making he had a prototype. I think I told you this story before. He had a prototype a portable printer. This is years and years ago. And he said, "Now, I've really got only one question for you." And he picked up his prototype and was handing it to me. He goes, "How long will this last?" And we dropped it. Now, he blames me and I blame him. So we dropped it.
Right.
And it just shattered in 8 million pieces. And I looked at him and said, "Well, it only is going to last about 3 feet."
Right. Which I'm sure made him very happy.
Yeah. No, he wasn't happy at all. I says, this was your prototype as close to your finished product as you're getting, right? He goes, yeah, the structure of it is about right. And he goes, well, it's not done yet. You know, to be honest with you, if it's a portable product and you already know that dropping is a real threat to this product, it probably shouldn't respond this way by disassembling so completely.
Right.
You know, when you drop it. So, you know, yeah, you got a point there. So they went back to the drawing board. And I don't know whatever happened to that product. But
but that is an important question, right? That, you know, how long will this last? And so right away that always directs me to having people talk about the use. Right. I mean, that's where that comes from. I mean, I used to once I was doing a clinic for setting up race cars, but they were also for it was for cars that we call driver's ed cars, where you can drive them in the street, but still take them to the track and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody raised their hand and asked this guy who's expert at setting up race cars. And they're like, well, when I do an alignment, you know, how long does it last? And he just goes to the first pothole. That was his answer. Right.
Yeah.
It was the same thing. He's like, you know what I mean? Right. Cause, and they're like, no, really? And he's like, no, that's it. You know,
hit a curb, you hit a pothole, you hit a side load on your tire.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It's gone.
Right. Exactly. So it's entirely use. And then, but that is a real question if you're selling a product. So the question is, all right, we need to sit down and define uses. And then of course, this is where I'm going to go into my use case 7 thing, where don't just stop at the ones that are obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about the potholes, right? Is that really something that you want to have that's within your normal product specification? And you can't emphasize enough the idea of fully characterizing use to answer a lot of these questions. And so when people ask you a question, you end up asking questions back that send them off thinking, you know, and having to do work a lot of times.
Well, you know, I think it's asking the right questions so that you help both people, both parties frame, well, what is it we're trying to accomplish here? You know, and it goes back to your very first question, Adam, is what are you trying to do? What are you going to use this for essentially? And yeah, there isn't it'd be magical if there was a formula. I was talking to somebody yesterday that wanted to set up exploring the idea of using artificial intelligence and machine learning to, for example, take a look at data from, say, a vibration sensor on a motor and interpret it, saying, oh, here's a problem or not a problem, or looking at field data and plugging it into an analysis engine of some sort, and it gives them the not just the plot, but what does it mean? What are the analytics? What's the next set of questions to ask? And I thought, you know, it's possible. It's going to take some oversight. I don't know whether the market will accept it yet or not. It'd have to be pretty well thought through. And but we're getting pretty darn close to parts, big parts of the reliability work that we do, and especially for predictive maintenance type activities. Yeah, we can automate that. We can put engines on that and pattern recognition systems on it and learning systems on it to continue to improve. It's coming. But
oh, sure.
A single formula. Yeah. You know, yeah. Use the Arrhenius equation. There's your RAM analysis. You're all good.
Right. Exactly.
No, I don't think so.
But with with what you're describing with the prognostic stuff, it is interesting, but also there's the not undervaluing it's fantastic to fantasize that the system tells you instantly, points you in the right direction as to what's wrong or what needs attention. But that's just the tip of that iceberg, right? Where the amount of work that went into a system that can do that is astounding. The research projects and companies so often want those features, but don't. And then they try to do a research project to develop it as part of a product development program. And that's never going to happen. They need to set aside individual initiatives to do research like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to stop and sell that because there's no quick ROI on that, right? It's much farther down the road. Because you can imagine doing the vibration analysis as you describe specific frequencies and patterns, you can isolate to specific parts. And I actually did a program like that once, was a conference call system that also had video in it and had a lot going on, and they were going for superbly high quality sound, which was what they were doing. And they had in test units, they had some that had the strange within a very specific frequency range would get a strange feedback, and mm-hmm. they couldn't figure out what it was. And it was only in some units and some in others not. And that's when they called me and said, do you have any ideas how to figure this out? So I grabbed a whole bunch of their units, and the biggest thing was going to be that it was happening a very small percentage of them. And of course, you know, so that means it was a variability within manufacturing to some degree. It seems like that variability wouldn't be it because it was in conference rooms. And so what I ended up doing was taking an electrodynamic vibration table, which you can control direction and frequency. Mm-hmm. And I ended up taking the entire thing apart and putting it together in certain individual pieces, almost like a Lego thing kind of thing, and mm-hmm. studying the vibration patterns, the responses, you know, to sweeping vibrations.
Yeah.
And what I ultimately, so I had them also, a lot of the parts were heat staked. If people, listeners know what that is, where you have a kind of a protrusion and then a hole that matches it. And then they're plastic and you melt, basically rivet it together by melting the plastic. It's basically plastic riveting. Mm-hmm. And I had some that had not been heat staked. They gave me individual parts. And what I started to suspect was, what about the variability of the heat staking, right? Because it has to do with how much force the parts are held together with.
Yeah, and if it's quite enough, it'll leave a little gap there. So exactly. It's not holding it tight. It can vibrate.
I got very suspicious. So I started to characterize the different degrees of pressure, the responses. And I did it by taping it, how hard I taped them together. They weren't heat staked or rubber bands and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I ended up isolating exactly which two parts that if you didn't heat stake correctly would give this characteristic, you know, vibration, you know, response back. And they found out that, yeah, if you ensure those, you know, that we ended up, I found it. But that was a lot of work.
I was going to say, it took you a couple of hours. You're, you know, just
I did
quick afternoon in the lab in the garage.
Yeah, I did it at lunch. Yeah. Like I was practically, you know what? By the end of it, I was like shell shocked, like the guys after World War II in trench warfare, because I've been by that electrodynamic vibration machine for so long.
Yeah.
Just sweeping through science sweeps of vibration, like, I'm going to lose my mind. But it was so much fun. You know, it was such a great, you know, detective work. Or, you know, what a kind of fun thing to, you know, and it seemed impossible at first, like, good luck, right? Mm-hmm. And then they came up with this one idea as I kept playing with it and playing with it. I'm like, where's the variability? There's a variability, right? That was the thing I knew because some didn't do it, you know? And and then honing, it was very exciting, you know, to actually find it in the end. But Yeah, it does a tremendous amount of work for them to answer this one simple question, right? And characterizing it. And then in the future, you know, they can now with their software program measure feedbacks of things and know that their heat staking process or manufacturing, you know, like they actually now can use that as
quality control signal.
Potentially. Yeah. Yeah, they have a signal. It's they have a mic built in, they're recording it, they get a feedback, a specific resonance. And so I could have characterized, if they wanted to, I could have kept going, right? And characterized every single set of parts that are heat staked together. You know, probably in the end, the combination would have been 100 and something, right? And then in the end, if they heard a feedback, they probably would have known exactly which two parts weren't heat staked correctly. You know, out of the whole assembly.
That yeah. Could be See, you know, and I'm sitting here as if I was the manager, I have the team and looking at the investment and like, you know, why don't we just invest in controlling our heat staking process and not look for a way to diagnose it? Because I don't need a PhD study on every design we put out. I just need to know I need a stable process, or maybe we should use a different technique.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. In that situation. Exactly. No. In that situation, there'd be no reason. Just, you know, they knew that they had to do better job quality controlling heat staking and stop there. You know, they just had no idea that was the thing to try and control when it happened. But yeah, exactly. So the investment's huge, and in that case, would not be worth it, right?
Yet it's one of those you don't see as often anymore. You know, the most common thing now is you'd send it back to the vendors. Hey, CM, something's not working here. Fix it. And then they don't have the resources to go study it because you're not paying them enough to have that facility or lab or capability. And that's probably a subject for a whole nother discussion. But back to our original question there is that, no, there's not a standard RAM formula out there that gives you the analysis, you know, capital T analysis. It has to be focused on what you're trying to answer, what you're trying to accomplish. And there are a lot of variables in and around that analysis and coordinating what they want versus or what they need, not always what they want, but what they need to what you're going to actually accomplish is critical. And that applies in reliability engineering and many, many, many other disciplines. So it's not unique to us.
So maybe our counsel to Bob would be his responsibility here is to ask the right questions back to them for the question they asked. And that's where his value add would be at that moment.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So, you know, we shared a couple of stories here. So with the listeners, if you head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, we'd love to hear your question or a story of getting a weird question and what you did about it or a uninformed question. Maybe we'll phrase it that way and how you handle it. We'd love to hear your success stories. Or if you're struggling with something or not trying to figure out what your boss really wants, let us know. Maybe we can help you out and might also make a good subject for a future podcast, which you might want to nudge your the requester to listen to. Maybe not. I'm not sure. But anyway, appreciate it, Adam. Thanks for chiming in on the question that we received. And let's look forward for some more questions from our listeners.
Yeah, please. I hope people take the time to do that. It's a lot of fun to hear what's going on and what you're thinking about.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Adam. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.